As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to Power Hour, The Athletic's Tuesday National College Football Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Nicole Auerbach. I'm thrilled to be joined by my friend and colleague, Michael Felder from Stadium, to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week in an hour or less. And as a reminder, if you enjoy this podcast, you probably enjoy the other podcasts that are on this feed. So be sure to subscribe, rate, and review The Andy Staples Show and Friends. 5 stars, because much like Ari Wasserman's favorite recruits, well, we're going to make an immediate impact, or we're going to jump in the transfer portal and then go somewhere else, because that's also happening. So we got a lot of options, but give us 5 stars and we will get into that portal, Felder. We got a lot.
We're going to get into the portal, but first I just want to say again, congratulations. Where I do get to do a show with the National Sports Writer of the Year, Nicole Auerbach. It's really
Thank
cool.
You.
Super proud of you. You got to go down. You got to get jazzed up and do the, you got to do a step and repeat from what I saw.
I did. It was, so I was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So not
shout
too
out
far.
The 336.
Mm-hmm. Which I learned while I was there. I've been to Winston-Salem before, but I learned the nickname, the Dash.
Yes.
It's a great nickname.
It's a great nickname. One of my best friends, Ryan Taylor, is from Winston. Obviously I do some stuff with Learfield. They're in Winston with Hartzell and Serber. They live right outside of Winston. So
do they call it the Dash?
Yeah, that's the name of the minor league baseball team.
Right, but that's just like a good name for a hyphenated place.
Yeah, it's the Dash. The Dash is a major part of the triad.
The Dash is where the awards thing was.
Which is awesome.
So, you know, I mean, like Jim Nance and all these people like flew to we all were in the Dash. It was lovely. Obviously, a step and repeat, very fun. How often do you get to be around step and repeats?
Yeah.
So it was lovely. And
How heavy is that award?
Mine was fine. Mine was like a normal glass like award weight. But they were doing a Hall of Fame for like it was Nance and Tom Verducci and a bunch of people. And those things, like people were like buckling under the weight of them. And there was this like one woman who like had to hand it to them each time. And I was like, man, her arm day is like today. Like this is what's happening right now. But no, it was cool. Although I will say like it was lovely. It was super fun. But there were all of these old timey sports writers that just had an endless amount of stories and they told them. And it was like a 5 hour ordeal. It was
there you go.
It was long. But my speech was 3 minutes as requested, and all these people came up to me afterwards and were like, Nicole, yours was the best speech. I was like, because it was the shortest. And they were like, exactly. Yep.
There you
exactly.
go. That's what it takes. You get short, sweet, to the point, you knock it out, you get to go. So I'm excited. Speaking of short and sweet, I think from a transfer portal standpoint, it has felt less than drawn out, right? Where we see Quinn Ewers enter. We see him commit to Texas. We see Spencer Rattler. He's going to South Carolina. He's bringing Austin Stogner with him. So
let's start there about the timeline, because we're going to get into Bo Nix and and Keaton Slovis and all these guys. I mean, it was
Dylan Gabriel, Max Johnson.
Yeah,
Max Johnson and Miles Brennan. Who's going to play quarterback at LSU next year?
Well, they're probably going to have to go in the portal and get somebody. I mean, this is we're going to, I want to get into the larger implications of this, but so in the timeline, like we know Quinn Ewers like took a couple visits. Those were, you know, well documented, reported. And we know that Spencer Rattler obviously had a pre-existing relationship with Shane Beamer. So is it like one phone call? Is it just like Shane Beamer? Like these are really fast. Like, it's so different than high school recruiting, which gets drawn out and this whole process and you're taking all these visits. Do you think that this stuff is the groundwork has been laid in the weeks prior to entering the portal, like that they kind of have a feel of where they might have interest before they go in? Or is this just happening really, really quick?
I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. So what we're dealing with is they have these pre-existing relationships, right? So even though you don't go to a school, that doesn't mean you don't still have friends that go to a school or coaches, relationship with coaches that go to that school. And as we live in, you know, the modern era of cell phone, DMs on IG, DMs on Twitter, the whole deal, you can maintain contact with people a lot easier than when I was in college. When I was in college, if a coach from another school wanted to contact me, which, you know, illegal, I don't care. If another coach would have wanted to contact me, they would have had to have my cell phone number. But now it's just a Facebook message, or it's just a Twitter DM, or it's just this, and just be like, hey, man, we're thinking about you. Hope you're doing well, yada, yada, yada. And I wasn't someone that, like, when I was coming, like, I went to school in 2003. So my point of contact was still my home phone line. And so they didn't all have my cell phone number, but now they all have their cell phone number. They all have their Twitter handles. They all have their Instagram handles. They all have their Facebook message, their Facebook information. They have all this stuff that you can stay in contact with these guys. And so, yeah, when you start looking at where you're going to end up, I think there are, the reason I said a little column A, a little column B, so the pre-existing relationships, those matter a ton. Because now it's like, you know, the second choice that I had was this guy, or I really like this quarterback's coach who's now moved to this school, and I really like this offensive coordinator who's now moved to this school, or they brought him with him to go here. And so you have that pre-existing relationship that you know, that you trust, that you feel good about. And then the other part of it is that ease of contact through the portal, but also just in general, the ease of contact goes a long way to relationships that maybe didn't exist before. And maybe it's a school that a kid wanted to go to, didn't get shown a lot of interest. Guess what? They've changed offensive coordinators, or they've changed quarterbacks coaches, or they've changed playing style. And now you're like, I can get closer to home. I can play for a coach that I like, or I can play in an offense that I want to play in. This is a school that's showing me love that didn't show me love before. And all those things kind of factor in. I think that's really, I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah. As you were explaining all of this, it got me thinking about, like, this is why the rule exists. So yes. It's two parts, right? So the portal was implemented in 2018 because coaches were blocking players. Yes. And they weren't releasing, like, they weren't allowing permission to contact. So this basically, like, it's funny because I don't think anyone thought that the phrase transfer portal was going to become a thing. It was just, it was just like the literal mechanism to do this in a way where the coach couldn't block you. And it was just like, here's, so you could put your information, your email. I don't know if anyone has, you know, seen it, what it looks like. It's literally just like if a player wants to put their email address or a cell phone number, like you can just list it there and then people can contact you. And that's all it is. Like, it is not some mysterious place. It is not something crazy. It wasn't really, again, the name wasn't supposed to be a catchy thing, but it became super, super easy to make the decision, like to do it and then immediately get contact. And then B, you have the second element this year for the first time. This is our first real off season with the one-time transfer rule. So if you haven't transferred before, you can play right away at your next school. And you know that. There's no waivers. Like we've talked about all these waivers, you know, Justin Fields, all these guys, like we've waited and waited and waited. And they get their waivers approved. But now you don't even have to do that. So if you're a quarterback who's transferred before and now you're doing it, you're going to have to apply for a waiver. You're going to have to go through some stuff.
Right.
But the guys we're talking about, Spencer Rattlers of the world, are, they
Dylan
know.
Gabriel.
Yeah, they know that they're going to play right away.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina is the most interesting one for me because...
Because of the pair?
The pair, but also, remember, South Carolina, when we were talking about South Carolina to start this season, they were like, oh, I guess we have to put our GA in at quarterback.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and I would say, like, the overall impression was better than expected, right? Year one, Shane Beamer, right? Reaching a bowl game. I mean,
they did a good job. I watching them this year, they've done a good job. They've figured things out. They've found a way to make it work. I think that's really important to note for sure. Hang on.
Because I'm just trying to think of the scenario that he's walking into, right? And you're thinking about first-time head coach, but it's someone he has a great relationship with. And Shane Beamer is someone that is known for his relationships, right? Like
right.
This is,
yes.
You know, he's going to be personable. He's going to get recruits because he's great to talk to and really like great to build a relationship with. But so that's why I wonder too, like obviously they needed quarterbacks when you're playing a GA, right. Like never a great idea, but what is that? So like, is he going to start? I mean, obviously you would think you're not going to go somewhere that you don't think you're not going to have a really good chance to start, right? If you're going to hop in the portal and come out of it.
That's the next part of the timeline thing, though, right? Is it happens quick because of relationships. It's happening quick because of the ease of contact. But also, it has to happen quick because if you can get in there to whether it's participate in bowl practices or to at least be there to do winter conditioning and get into spring football, that's a lot better. You're setting yourself up for success a lot more than these guys, some of these guys who end up leaving after spring ball. When you leave after spring ball, you just get that August workout and then you have to go.
So all of this stuff is getting sped up because you had the coaching changes happening earlier because of the signing period. Mm-hmm. And then you have this happening so that basically everyone wants to sign early or transfer early so that they are there so that everyone gets a leg up. I mean, everything is just
chance of playing. Yeah.
Accelerating. So so you were saying like some guys are moving for scheme or individual coaches. Obviously we don't know where some of these other quarterbacks are going to land yet. So we can talk about them going in the portal, but what about the fit for Rattler, the offense? What do you see?
I'm curious to see the pieces at the end of the day, right? Like that's the most important element here are the pieces and how they're able to stack pieces around them. They weren't remarkably explosive this year, but they found a way to get it done. I think the interesting part, at least on my end, is going to be like having Stogner, I think, is a great thing. I think they should have thrown the ball to Stogner more in Bedlam, honestly. But they're probably going to lose, what is it, Van? Van's going to be gone until you end up with the next guys on your roster, Jaheim Bell, and you end up with DeCarion Joyner, who's a converted quarterback to that wide receiver spot. And the scariest part for me is like saying these names. I know what they did this year, and I'm like, did they enter the portal? I'm not sure. So I don't know. And I think the pieces are going to be interesting. I think Spencer Rattler, I don't think Lincoln Riley was lying when he said that Spencer Rattler is the best football thrower that he's had. I don't think he was lying about that. I don't think he was jazzing this guy up. I think the reality of it is going to be weapons and offensive line play. And if they can play on the offensive line, then they can make something happen.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
So you mentioned, you know, who's going to play quarterback at LSU. A&M's down to one scholarship quarterback as well. Like all of these other places where these guys have left, the assumption has to be that they're going to also go into the portal, right? Like, isn't this essentially become a self-fulfilling prophecy in some ways too?
I think A&M is an interesting one because they have that kid. Who is he? The
Haynes King. But like,
but the guy coming in this year.
Yeah.
The guy coming in this year. Now I'm mad because I can't remember what his name is. And now I have to find that so that I know what I'm talking about. But it's one of those things where you look at it. Obviously, Calzada, who he beat Alabama.
That's what's wild.
My man's beat Alabama. And they're like, doesn't matter. We got another stud coming in. We got Haynes King coming back. We're going to be ready to rock and roll. And so it's going to be interesting how this all shakes itself out, because this is it's tough. And the thing that I can say, though, is Connor Wegman. Connor Wegman is the five-star quarterback that they have. And the coolest thing about that is he's like their sixth best recruit because they have all these other five stars at different
positions. And he's the number two quarterback in the class, and he's the sixth best recruit. I mean, they have an insane class coming in.
So I will just say shout out to people. This is one of those things where people just recognize that, like, you can be the best quarterback or the second best quarterback. And guess what? Still not even the best player in your class, which is just, we talked about it with the Heisman, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. This is seeing it in motion. So yeah, no, I think that for Calzada, he was like,
but like, even so, don't you think that these places, like, to me, I think first of all, there's going to be quarterbacks that get stuck in the portal, right? That have nowhere to go.
Sure.
That will take a place where they might be a third string guy at an A&M or something, because
that's the choice. How do you make that choice? How do you make the choice of, because I see Jacob Sermon is leaving Central Michigan. Why? Like he already left Washington. So how do you make the choice? If you're leaving somewhere where you are a backup, or you feel like you're going to be buried, or you feel like you're not valued, or you're not a fan of the new coaching staff,
obviously,
or the change,
and you think you're going to start somewhere else, so that's where you start. Yes. Mentally, absolutely, you think you're going to get picked up.
But then, if somebody doesn't call, if somebody doesn't answer, somebody's like, no, we're dedicated to our guys. We have guys that we like. We like our room. I think there are two different areas.
There are, but some coaches would still say in that scenario that they will accept a transfer for that they don't think is going to play, or, you know, just an experienced guy, you know, as an emergency backup type.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, emergency backup, but also, if you've had a guy who's got playing experience, it's still valuable to have in the room, as long as they're not, like, you know, having outrageous expectations.
That's the exact thing that I was going to get to, is I think that there is real value in, I don't care if it, Calzada, Max Johnson, all these guys, even if they don't come in and become your instant starter, your world beater, they still bring value to that room. They've still sat there and watched. Like, they've played against Alabama. They've played against Auburn. They played against Georgia. They played against all these teams. And so there's value to them being in that room to help your young guys.
Well, like, an example of this that I continually do forget, I just had to Google to make sure he is actually still on the roster because he's barely played. But, like, Alan Bowman,
yes,
who had real experience at Texas Tech,
yep,
is in the Michigan quarterback room. You don't think, mm-hmm, that's been valuable for them? Of course it has.
Yeah, and I think that's the part I'm thinking, do you see your value in this? And maybe that does alter, like, you come out of high school, you're thinking, I'm going to set the world on fire, I'm going to the NFL. And then you realize, oh, I've got real value in doing this, and I'm going to get my education, and then maybe I become a coach, or maybe I do decide to do something in the work sector, if you will. But there is still value to that. There's value in that. And I think that's going to be the reckoning that a lot of guys are going to have to figure out. And that's the hard part. It's really hard. And I say this as someone who I thought, hey, when I got to college, I'm going to bust ass on special teams. That'll be good for me. And then the rug got pulled out from under me. We changed coaches. We changed our entire defensive system. We should have. We had to. We were 117th in defense in 2003. Guess what? That's horrible. You're bad. And then the new coach came in and he was like, we're going to play two high safeties. And I was like, oh, that's a thing I can't even do. Can't do it. Not going to be good at it. We'll never be good at it. I'm a cover three spin down guy. If you're not spinning me down into the box, I can't do anything. And you have to readjust your expectations. And so I was good in the room. I was good at the chalkboard. I was good in the room. I'll never forget, they had me on shadow duty. We got this kid, Martell Thatch, who's a four-star safety from, I think, Dudley High School. He took my number. Still not thrilled about that. But you know what? The four-star wants number 21. The scrub has to give up 21 and be a double number with Ronnie McGill to be number 25. But they had me on shadow duty in practice, where literally in practice it was get him to where he's supposed to be, and then you get out of the play so that he can play the play. And that's going to be some people's lot in life. And that's going to be, there's value to it. You just have to understand the value. Does that make sense? Like what I'm saying? Like you have to find that value.
Yeah. And again, I think some of this stuff is like a reality check. I mean, I think, you know, you always talk about this in college football. Everyone thinks they're going to the NFL. College basketball, everyone thinks they're one and done. And you at some point hit a reality check. I think what's interesting about this wave of quarterbacks, though, is you absolutely have the guys that we're talking about, the guys that are going to be depth, that are going to be, well, maybe depth. This is actually like the biggest challenge everyone is facing right now is actually having good depth, because the backups are transferring so freely and they can play somewhere else. But these are big name guys. You said, like, we're talking about guys who, players who beat Alabama. These are players who have real experience. Of the quarterbacks that are still floating around, so take Rattler off the board. Who's the biggest get? Like, who are we going to say, you know, whenever they announce their next school, is the splashiest offseason quarterback move?
I'm very intrigued by Dylan Gabriel. A guy coming from Hawaii that was committed to Army for the longest time and then ultimately ended up at UCF. And like watching the way that he's elevated his stock and what he's able to do, I think that's interesting. Obviously committed to UCLA now, which gets him to the West Coast. And, you know, that's the flight from Hawaii to Los Angeles is way different than going to Orlando. So that's going to be interesting. I'm intrigued by him. Keaton Slovis is another one that I find interesting, especially because he had already played for Graham Harrell, who does some of the similar things to Lincoln Riley, but I think it feels like there's, whether it's writing on the wall or whatnot, he's looking for a fresh start. He doesn't want to start over right, with a new staff in the same place.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, like, Jackson Dart was really good, and like, you must just be thinking you're not going to beat him out. But I agree. I did think that was interesting in terms of style of offense. So I feel like that'll be a winner as well. I'm so fascinated because this stuff changes realistic expectations. Like, depending on who is Brian Kelly's quarterback in year one, like, that changes the way that we are going to view the Brian Kelly hire at LSU.
Absolutely. And I'm going to throw two guys that I understand most people have not seen them play very much. Most people don't know much about them, but Jordan Yates and Cameron Cooper are two guys that for me, I'm just Jordan Yates. Obviously I have like that kind of a semi-personal connection between knowing his quarterback's coach and obviously being teammates with TJ Yates. Like I watch him more intently than probably most fans that don't give a rip about what Georgia Tech is doing. But I love the way, like, he's a well-taught quarterback. He's just short. So how does that fit for him? And then Cameron Cooper, I thought, was always one of these guys that he reminded me a lot of, like, Tanner Morgan, right? Tanner Morgan's at what? Minnesota? Cameron Cooper reminded me a lot of that. And they just went in a different direction at Wazoo. And so he's kind of lost in the shuffle. But I think if he ends up at, whether it's a Mountain West school or Conference USA school or MAC school, where he's going to throw the ball 40 times a game and it's all going to be passes that are between, you know, 22 and 8 yards, and he's just going to complete them because he's got such a high hit rate in terms of what he's able to do when he's comfortable in the pocket. I'm intrigued by that because I think that's another thing that we don't talk about nearly enough is there's different quarterbacks for different spots. And like Tanner Morgan, when he was committed to Western Michigan, I was like, this is perfect for him. And then guess what? The coach at Western Michigan went to Minnesota. And so they kept finding ways to make him still be successful by doing a lot of the same stuff that he was going to do there. Kenny Pickett's another one. When Kenny Pickett was going to Temple, I was excited. And then he goes to Pitt, and guess what? He's finally lived up to what we thought he could be coming out of high school. So I just think it's about – I think spot is so important. I think – and that's where those relationships come in. Those relationships matter. Those relationships are what counts. Those relationships are what – not just get you on the field, but like put you in – they those – massaging the situation to understand that it's not just a name that I got. It's not just a star ranking that I got. It's not just a boost. Excuse me. It's not just a boost in like 24/7 or whatever. What I got is a guy that I really do believe in and that I do care about, that I do trust, and we're going to let him go out and make plays.
Right. And I want to get into, we're going to talk a little Nick Saban.
Yes.
I know you love Nick Saban.
Yes,
I had a fun project on him that was out this week. So we want to get into that, but real quick, just to reemphasize this again, I wrote a story in October about how coaches, just the biggest question mark, the hardest thing right now when they're looking at their roster is backup quarterbacks and quarterback depth, really good experienced quarterback depth.
Yes.
And now we're seeing this play out with 5-star quarterbacks. We're seeing it play out with 4-star, 3-star. We're seeing it at all levels. And that is going to be a massive story moving forward. Mm-hmm. Not that you're going to have GAs play quarterback at all these places, but there's a massive drop off, and it cost teams like Penn State. It cost teams.
Oh yeah.
In pivotal
the most
moments.
Crystallized example. Penn State is the most crystallized example.
Yes.
Because if they had Will Levis, that team maybe looks a little different.
And the whole trajectory of the season changes if they don't just, you know, move backwards for three quarters against Iowa. So
what do you think about the managing of it, though? Because
that's what the coaches are saying is the hardest part.
Yeah. Because you look at what they're doing at Michigan with J.J. McCarthy.
I think that's the only way that you can kind of do it. And again, not everyone's going to have that situation. But, you know, Ohio State had too many guys, right? Too many 5-star guys in the same room. But Michigan basically took a 5-star kid, said, we got packages for you. We're going to get you reps. You're going to get experience in practice. We're going to get you better. But he was clearly okay with not starting as a freshman, right? Like, and I think he was I was at the Big Ten championship game. I'm in the tunnel watching them come off the field. No one was happier than J.J. McCarthy.
Good.
Like, he was giddy. And so that, it has to be a special personality, but I think it has to be, like, if it's a 5-star freshman who is cool, again, like, wants to compete for the starting job, but doesn't necessarily expect it as a freshman, but thinks that by sophomore year, like, they'll be in that position, then I think it works. But otherwise, you're either, you know, you're probably immediately losing the guy who loses the quarterback competition in so many different scenarios. There's so few where you're going to think that someone's going to just sit and wait.
Right.
And even knowing that, you know, they're just one snap and one injury away, and that, like, it's incredibly valuable to be on the team. Unless you're a guy, I mean, I was going to say, unless you know, maybe you've got a girlfriend, maybe you're a couple classes away from a major, but we're seeing guys do that anyway, right? Like, guys who've been in place for a while and are entrenched still doing it. So, the coaches I talk to just say that it's really hard because you try to be honest, but that position is so different from everything else because you can't really share it. And then what happens is when you have your starter, then there's an injury or something, the backup doesn't have the reps that they need because you wouldn't want to split the reps so much in practice just on the off chance that something happens, because then your starting quarterback's going to be like, what's going on? I need all the reps. And also, are you like reopening this competition? Like, it just, there's so many dynamics at play that it does become very hard for coaches to manage. But again, they get paid a lot of money to do this, but that is the hardest. I think this is the hardest roster piece, I would argue by a lot right now, because so important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it comes down to practice style. You can't run practice the way that I practice football, the way that Coach Bunning did football practice with us. You have to, and we're seeing teams move more into it, whether it's the Chip Kelly model, the Larry Fedora model, where you can't just take, we're going to have 15 minutes of conditioning at the end of practice. And no, you know what we're going to do? Our ones, twos, and threes are going to get the same amount of reps every single day. They're going to execute. They're going to get the job done. And then conditioning is a part of that, because as they run down the field, that next group's going to line up and run it. And the next group's going to line up and run it. And everybody's going to be running. And that's our conditioning. So you have to incorporate that into what you do so that you can get these guys reps. I think the managing of it is interesting because quarterbacks can't do anything else. And I think that I do need to say that, because quarterbacks can't do anything else. They're not going to be guess what? They're not going to be on punt team. They're not going to be on kickoff. They're not going to be on kickoff return. They're not going to be on punt return. So they can't do anything else. They're not even, at best, the only other thing most quarterbacks can do is be a holder on field goal team, which we saw Mac Jones do, obviously. And like, yeah, he played X amount of snaps. What before his before he was a starter, he played X amount of snaps. What were all those snaps?
Snapping.
Field goal. Holding on field goal.
Not snapping. Holding.
They don't, like, it's not the same as a linebacker or a lineman. Like, we used to throw linemen in, and teams throw linemen into field goal because field goal gives you a chance to buy them some reps. They get a little bit of contact. They get a little competition. You throw them on that punt team and that spread punt in that back line, so they get a chance to do that. You throw your linebackers. All your linebackers are going to be on your kickoff team. They're going to be on your kickoff return team. Your running backs get a chance to, whether it's return punts or be blockers on punt return. Like, you get all those things. Your defensive backs are going to be your gunners. They're going to be your jammers. Your wide receivers are going to be jammers and gunners. We saw Jameson Williams get thrown out of a football game for being a gunner. So, like, you can't do that with quarterbacks.
Yes, and also, again, in practice, you can't get them the reps that they would need to. And
you have to restructure your practice. You have to do – you've got to – more people have to lean into that speed practice.
Or they've got to pull guys, convince them to stay after practice to run stuff on themselves. So it's a mess, and it's only going to continue. And you know, we're going to see where these guys land. But again, as we're recording this, basically the only one we know where they're landing is Spencer Rattler, and he's off to South Carolina.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Well, let's get to Saban.
Yeah, let's talk about this story, because I think I told you about this because I've been working on it for a while.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly fun to work on. And I did it with Aaron Suttles, our Alabama beat writer. And really what got me thinking about this was, do you remember like this time last year where there was that Zoom like Saban recruiting pitch that leaked? Like, somebody clearly filmed it and he was like, we got this many national championships. And so I'm watching it, and I'm listening to him list off these things, and I think all of our reaction was like, oh man, this kid is absolutely getting his offer pulled, or you know, whoever leaked this, whatever it was. But I remember thinking, wow, okay, so he's listing off all of these national titles and how many guys they have in the NFL and all these things. What did he say before he could say all of this? Like, this is such a specific to right now, the time, 2020 Alabama. And it got me thinking, I wonder what his pitch was when he was a head coach for the first time at Toledo, when he was at Michigan State. And so I wanted to talk to people who were recruited by him at all these stops. And obviously Aaron knows the Alabama guys. And so we wanted to see what was the same, what was different in the pitch. And also, one of the things I asked everyone was, what is it about him in particular that allows him to connect with people so quickly? Because that is something people talk about, like my grandma, my mom, everyone, like so all these different peoples, all these different walks of life. You know, how does he do it? How does he put people at ease? And then I was fortunate enough to also talk to Saban himself before the season about this. And you know, I just found it really interesting. I'd be curious, you know, what jumped out to you in the story, because it's basically a collection of vignettes and stories, you know, explaining how he makes you feel. Like, if you were in the room being recruited by Nick Saban, this is what he would say to you.
I am, for everyone who thinks I'm always negative all the time, just want to tell you, I'm a humongous Nick Saban fan. I've read How Good Do You Want to Be a couple times. It legitimately has, like, streamlined my life. Like, you know this about me, hour back, like, I wear the same thing every single day. I never have to think about what I'm going to wear when I get dressed, because it gives me time to think about what I'm doing for work from a work standpoint. I'm hyper-focused on that. And between Saban and, this is going to sound crazy, but a lot of fashion designers do the same thing too.
They do. Yeah. And so, like Steve Jobs as well. Yeah. That was probably the most famous example of it.
I'm fully in on that lifestyle. It is, I'm in, it's worked out well for me. It's given me the energy to do what I need. I think the Mel Tucker story was probably the most interesting one.
I loved that one too.
Because, and to go forward, but you asked, what did he do when he was at Toledo? What did he do when he was at Michigan State? He leaned on the NFL. Mm-hmm. He leaned on the NFL hard. And he was like, listen, I've been in the NFL. I know how to get you there. I know how to get players ready for the next level of football, the next level of their football career. I know how to do that. And obviously, as you mentioned in the article, he shifted. Shift is the wrong word. He's added the college success because he didn't have it early. He didn't have it when he was at Toledo. He didn't have it really when he was at Michigan State. He started getting it when he was at LSU, and then he got obviously the ultimate kingdom when he's at Alabama. But I love that he adds to it. It's one of those things. I think about it with respect to Butch Davis. And Butch Davis used to show a list of his like first and second round draft picks. And be like, these are the guys that I helped get to the next level. Do you want to be one of them? And it worked because UNC was recruiting really well when he was there.
Yeah, and that's what this is, right? Like, it's here's my track record, and then here is my personalized plan for you. And you, like, obviously, you know, you had Ronaldo Hill talking about like playing a position that he cares about, that he can specifically say like, this is how I coach it in the NFL. You know, he still is always around his DBs. Like, it is a point of pride. He's around them. He's hovering in practice even now. But like, for him to say that and then back it up, and then Ronaldo Hill gets to the NFL and finds out that like he has better technique and other vets want to steal stuff from him and ask him where he learned it, that immediately validates all these other things, right? And so you have that piece that was specific for him and what he played and where he was going. But also nothing was about his older brother, who was already on the team, right? You know, personalized, like figuring out one of the things that he said over and over in our conversation was just like, it's not that hard to figure out what is the most important thing to someone. And so you personalize your message based on that. So that's different too than, you know, recruiting an offensive guy or recruiting, a quarterback in a class with another quarterback. But he's so good at figuring out how to make that stuff work. And then when you don't promise playing time, then, you know, A, that works on the hyper competitive guys because they're probably going to get it anyway, but it'll push them. But then it also, again, we're talking about all these guys transferring because of expectations not matching reality, becomes harder to do it for that specific reason when you're not going to have wild expectations.
Yeah. He's honest and he sets the stage. And so that honesty does set expectations. You're going to have to earn everything that you get. That's why the Julio anecdote is really interesting, right? Julio even said, listen, he put me third or fourth on the depth chart. He didn't just say you're going to come in and you're going to be the starter and you're going to be the all-world everything. Was he all-world everything? Absolutely. Especially because that when Julio got there, that was the time when Alabama basically just threw the ball to one guy and ran it every other play. But
it's wild that he said that he's like the most important recruit that he had at Alabama, like for turning it around, but also was willing to walk away and was just like, well, you can join us or not. Like, we've got other receivers, but like,
yeah,
you know, but we'll win without you.
It's one of those things that to me, and I do think that being detail oriented, because he doesn't think about outside stuff, because he doesn't, and that doesn't mean he's not of the world. He is. I think he's one of the most remarkably self-aware and understanding of not just the college football landscape, but like the social landscape of America. He understands it very well. And he grew up, he was a poor kid from West Virginia, right? He understands it very well. Like he gets it. He understands what's happening, the gravity, the value of all these things. And what he does is weave a sort of personalized individual look at how he can help you be better on the field, be better as a man, be better in what you want to do. And I think that's really important. And again, if you have not checked out How Good Do You Want to Be, check it out. Like, I love it. And But that ability to weave through those through lines, because for some guys, they don't need football. They're going to be okay. They just like playing. And the way you talk to that guy is a lot different than the way you talk to a guy who needs football. And then there's guys who they need football, but they don't have to get it from Alabama. They could get it from LSU, or they could get it from A&M, or they could get it from Ohio State, or they can get all that stuff from there. So how do you dial into that guy? How do you dial in? Like, how do you dial into Landon Collins, right? Mom wants you to go to LSU. Everybody thinks you're going to go to LSU. How do you dial into him? Hey, man, I'm going to challenge you. You're like, because Landon Collins was not a starter early on.
Well, and that's something that other coaches use against them, right? They say you're not, you're going to be buried. You're going to be buried on the depth chart, all of these things. And to have all the counters, A, the success, the track record, but also that, like, I'm sure, you know, again, people are wired differently, but if you're a really, really talented guy who started every level of football you've ever played, to have to earn your spot in a place like this and like earn that level of respect, I'm sure there's more validation. Like there's something that feels different about when you finally do it, when you didn't get handed it.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the differences between, goodness gracious, was that 2008? Where Clemson promised Jamie Harper he was going to get the first carry of the season, and he got the first carry, and guess what? Fumbled it. Alabama just proceeded to beat the wheels off of them. And I just can't imagine Nick Saban had Najee Harris as number three on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. Najee? What? He's great.
Yeah.
And it is about earning it. And
I think too, like this is what was interesting, because it was obviously focused on like the recruiting, like in your home, phone calls, like
his recruiting, right?
Yeah.
He has like very specific height, weight, speed, size, all the body style, arm length. And he sticks to it. That's the other part I love, is he sticks to it. Don't care if you're a 5'8" defensive back that seems like you're all world, not interested. Because you're not going to fit into what I want to do, because you don't have the arms that are long enough to play some of the techniques I want. And so he finds all these guys that fit into the puzzle piece. He just keeps finding the best guys that fit into his puzzle pieces.
One of his former assistants said that he's the best evaluator of talent.
Yeah.
And that he can do the same amount as like an entire staff. And so all of the assistants have to be so on top of it with their evaluations, because they have to do theirs before he can do his. So it's the details, it's the specificity, and it's all of those things. And then to hear all of these players from every walk of life and every level, mm-hmm. including Mel Tucker, who didn't play for him, by the way, but has worked for him in three different stops, clearly has an incredible relationship with him that was maintained after he said no to Toledo. The 40 years, not four thing. It is catchy. Mm-hmm. It sounds cliche, but all of these stories include, because this is what was cool about talking to like all the former guys, like not the current Alabama guys, not the very recent Alabama guys, was all of these stories and notes that didn't even make the story too, about all of the things that happen after college and the way that he helps and the way that he calls and when he checks in on this and whatever it might be, because, you know, that's part of his pitch, right? It's about like the person. And, I just think you can tell when people are genuine and when people aren't, but to actually back it up and then to be able, like, you know, to see these stories and showing up, you know, at a high school Hall of Fame induction.
Right.
You know, all of these different moments in people's lives or picking up the phone, in a pivotal career moment or whatever it might be.
That stuff matters.
That stuff matters.
It makes you feel like it does. It does. Like, I Gunnar Brewers, who recruited me to UNC, I love him. Unequivocally, I didn't play wide receiver, but he's a wide receivers coach. I love him. And he has a lot of that same relationship type ability. This guy, he's a guy that texts and calls me on my birthday every year. He doesn't have to do that. I'm not helping him do anything, but he shows up and he shows up for me. And I guess ultimately I get increasingly frustrated when I see coaches not do that. Does that make sense?
Yes. And, you know, as you were talking about the phone call stuff, just reminded me, I did a story on Leonard Hamilton a couple years ago, who's maybe the most underrated college basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And the story was they had a player was dealing with a death in the family. And so they had to fly. He was going to leave from the Sweet 16 site or Elite 8 site, mm-hmm. wherever it was, and to be there at like 6 a.m. And he was talking to me about that, like, yeah, I mean, the wins, whatever, like, Hall of Fame coach. But he was saying, like, what means more is, like, he gets calls on Father's Day. And he's been invited to be in his former players' weddings and stuff. Yeah. And it's, like, that type of thing. And you know, I kept thinking about that a lot in these conversations about Saban as well. And, you know, the role that a college football coach plays for these guys is so important in your life and your development. And that's, you know, one thing that I think makes some coaches really good at college and some not as good in the NFL because like it's such a developmental phase in your life. So I had a lot of fun working on it. And
it's great. Folks, read the story, subscribe to The Athletic, read the story. What is it? Theathletic.com/Nicole. Get in there, subscribe. Yep. It's a great story. Like it's, again, it speaks to, that's the part of college football that I really love, that I care about. You know what I mean? Like those relationships matter. Like I know guys, like I've got teammates that I am close with. I know they still talk to Coach Bunning. I know, and it matters. Like that stuff, and we talked about it off the top of the show, talking about the transfer portal, right? Where that relationship that even if you don't go to their school, the relationship that you build with these guys, if you build a real, genuine relationship, you can lean on that. You can lean on it if you want to transfer, but you can also lean on it, as we see with Mel Tucker in this story, when you have to get to, when you're looking for that job or looking to further your career. So, yeah, I mean, I love it. It's a great story. Been fun. You know what? I know we're going a little bit longer than usual, so I'm going to go something quick right here. Oregon's auctioning off PEs, player edition Jordans, and the money's going to fund the football NIL, which I think is amazing. This is a huge deal. This is another game changer. This is something that Oregon has that most people don't, mm-hmm. if we're being quite honest. But it's a really cool way to help get these guys some extra cash because I don't know how deep in the sneakers world you are, but PEs are like impossible to get.
I didn't know the acronym until right now. So if that answers your question of how deep I am in the sneaker world, I think it does.
Yeah, so we'll get that. So to me, my flavor of the week is auctioning off PEs because I missed on those. I missed on the Concord. I missed on the Concord, or not the Concord. I missed on the Cool Grays on Saturday because my phone broke. So by the way, look at this. Not a BlackBerry right now.
What is that?
This is some Samsung something. I don't know how to use this thing at all. My BlackBerry doesn't get here for 5 more days, and then I can take this thing back and get back to life.
Last person in the world to have a BlackBerry. Congratulations. Maybe that's why it's hard to find and take you 5 days.
Yeah, it's the most secure mobile device. All right, what do you got flavor of the week real quick, and then we'll do last call.
Yeah, okay, well, mine's actually just straight up just going to be food because I've been traveling a bunch, and I'm finally home, and I'm going to like make something delicious and, you know, have the apartment smelling great, play some Christmas music or something. I don't know. I haven't done any holiday things yet. So I'm going to do all those things.
Do you have a tree? Are you going to, you're a tree
I do
person?
Not. Well, I usually would get like a little fake tree, like a small one. Haven't even done that. Probably too late at this point since I'm going to go to visit my parents in a week. Okay. So just real quick, you don't need to give me like play by play on this. We can have that conversation off air. Braised short ribs. Hard. Easy. Like one, like give me
very what, easy.
Easy. Okay.
Very so easy.
Should that be what I do this week?
Yes. I absolutely say go for it. You can do them over grits. You can do them over rice. You can do them over mashed potatoes. Mm. But all you have to do is you get that good sear on, you season them. You get the good sear on the outside first. Then you get some vegetables, some aromatics in there. And then you put them back in there with your braising liquid. I love to use red wine. I'm sure you got a bottle of that laying around somewhere. Throw a little red wine, put the lid on that Dutch oven. You throw it into the oven. 3 hours later, you've got delicious fall off the bone, put it over rice. Then you can reduce the liquid, do a little pan sauce. You're done. You're good to go.
Okay. That's happening. That's going to happen this week. All right, let's do our last calls. This is the segment where we rant or rave about whatever we want, whatever we would be choosing to. At last call at a bar. Yours is a little wholesome. So is mine. I'll go first. Okay. As I mentioned off the top, I just got back from your home state and I was in Winston-Salem. The people there in the Dash were lovely. There were all these volunteers that were part of the National Sports Media Association that were just so like kind and thoughtful and like were giving us airport shuttles at like 4 a.m. I mean, it was lovely. So just a shout out to them. Also the organization, it was a lovely award ceremony, and I got to hang out with Justin Williams, our Cincinnati beat writer, and Grace Rayner, my bestie who covers Clemson for us. And it was just a delight. And there's not that many opportunities. Like, Felder, you and I live in Chicago, and we still don't see each other very often, right? Like, there's just not a lot of opportunities where you actually cross paths with your close friends in this field. Because usually you're all covering different things. You live in different parts of the country. So it was just delightful to be around a lot of my friends in the profession. They're so talented. And like Grace's family was there. My family was there. It was just a lovely, lovely experience. So I'm just in a very delightful mood, and I'm cheersing to celebrating success and getting to hang out with my besties from the Athletic CFB team.
Look at that. I'll toast a liquid death to that. Bing.
You really do like that. You are constantly drinking that. Does it really taste different than water?
Tastes different than water. And here's the kicker. Once I open a can, there is no top to screw back on.
So you gotta drink
it. I have to drink the whole thing.
Okay, that part I get. We'll see.
Hydration is through the roof right now.
Okay, I drink regular water out of the tap, but you know. Okay.
Listen, I do too, but I don't drink nearly as much of it as I do with these cans. So I'm gonna go with my last call because I gotta ship Liquid Death today to my brother's house.
No,
I'm gonna
get. Are you really?
Yes, I'm going to ship it to my brother's house so that I have it when I get there. I'm going home for the first time since 2019. My wife and kid are going back to Charlotte for the first time since 2018. I haven't seen my brother. I haven't put eyes on my sister-in-law, my niece and nephew. I haven't seen them since summer 2019 when we were in Dewey Beach. So I'm very excited to get to see them on the home turf. We're going to see a couple friends as well. But I get to have, my sister-in-law is Mexican, and they have their Christmas party, which means a full mariachi band in full effect. We're going to be drinking whiskey and tequila, a real deal last call at like 4 a.m.
Love that.
Listening to like a live mariachi, hanging out. I cannot wait. I am so excited. And then just getting to hang out with my brother. I talked to my little brother for 90 minutes about what this trip is going to look like. And he gave me the green light. He said, hey man, if you could cook dinner Thursday, Friday, maybe even Sunday, that would take a lot off our plate. We'd appreciate it. I said, don't worry. I got you. Sheet pan pizza on Thursday when I get there. We're doing burgers on Friday when I get there with double fried fries. We're going to go ahead and do a steak night on Sunday. And I got to make a lunch on Sunday too. We're doing chicken for lunch, steak for dinner. I'm going to be in my bag. I'm going to be at home. And my little brother did say something. And this is the last thing for me. He goes, I know you're excited to see your niece and nephew, but it also feels like you just want to go to Harris Teeter.
I do love Harris Teeter.
Yeah, it's my goat grocery store. Obviously, I haven't been to Wegmans. I don't live in New York.
Wegmans is also amazing. There, I would still put Wegmans above Harris Teeter, but it's great. It's great.
But I'm going to my brother's Harris Teeter, and then I get to go drive by my house, see how my house is doing,
and then go to another Harris Teeter,
and then go to my Harris Teeter.
It does sound like that's what you're most excited about. So I feel like your last call is actually about Harris Teeter, to be honest.
Yeah. Shout out to HT, baby.
All right. Let's wrap it there. Thank you, as always, for listening to Power Hour. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, as Felder said, you can sign up at theathletic.com/Nicole for a special annual deal. One True Pod will be on this feed later this week with Max Olson, Jason Kersey, Sam Kahn. Lots for them to talk about. Then, of course, Andy Staples, Ari Wasserman. They'll be back with their usual antics later this week. And Felder and I will be back next Tuesday for the next episode of Power Hour. Thank you for listening.